This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. The United Nations has designated 2012 as the International Year of the Cooperative. What role do cooperatives play in our economy, and how do they compare to shareholder-owned businesses? How can cooperatives help contribute to a more equitable and sustainable society worldwide? To help answer these questions, I have as my guest Gary Gardner, Senior Fellow at World Watch Institute and author of Emerging Cooperatives, published in World Watch Institute's 2012 Vital Signs Report. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Diane. It's good to be here.
Perhaps we could start out with a definition of a cooperative.
Well, a cooperative is a business, but unlike most businesses that we're familiar with, it is owned by and run by its members. So whereas a regular corporation would be owned by shareholders, the members of a cooperative are those who own it, and they're also the ones who govern it.
What is the value of cooperatives? What advantages do they confer?
Well, they help to keep economic activity local, and they help to keep the profits that are generated from economic activity in the hands of those who use the particular business. So, for example, in a consumer cooperative such as REI, there may be rebates to the folks who purchase from REI. There may be other ways in other kinds of consumer cooperatives where the profits are returned to the people who actually make the purchases. And, of course, there's different kinds of cooperatives as well. There's the consumer cooperatives that I just mentioned. There are worker cooperatives in which the workers are the owners and the people who decide how the firm is run. The other kinds are producer cooperatives, and these would be the farmers, for example, who are trying to get the best price for the crops that they produce. And then purchasing cooperatives. So these would be groups of people or institutions that band together, all of whom need the same kinds of inputs to their business, and they try to get the best possible prices for those inputs. So those are purchasing cooperatives. So there are different kinds of cooperatives. Each of them has a slightly different benefit, but all of them basically return control and wealth to those who use the cooperative.
Would you say a few words about the history of cooperatives?
Sure. Cooperatives, by some accounts, go way back, many hundreds of years, but by most accounts, in 1844, the Rochdale Cooperative in the UK was formed, and that was the first sort of modern cooperative. And it was set up to help promote the textile industry in England.
What were some of the political forces that encouraged the formation of these early cooperatives?
Well, actually, many of them were quite influenced by the Industrial Revolution. So that in the Industrial Revolution, starting in the mid-18th century, you started to have a lot of people moving from rural areas to cities. They weren't necessarily in the best working conditions or the best living conditions. And so workers, and in many cases consumers, were trying to find ways in which they could get a better deal in the economic system. And that's how they started to band together and say, hey, we could take a little more control over economic activity if we ran a cooperative ourselves rather than being, you know, just workers or just consumers or just producers in a standard corporation.
How widespread are cooperatives at present?
The cooperatives exist in about 96 countries around the world, and about a billion people worldwide belong to are members of cooperatives. So 96 is roughly half of the countries in the world, so they're pretty widespread, and they tend to predominate in developed countries, but they're also found in developing countries as well, and there tends to be more of a variety of them in developed countries. But they are found pretty much on every continent around the world.
To what extent are cooperatives represented in the different economic sectors?
Well, there's different ways that you can slice the cooperative pie, and I've mentioned, you know, workers, producers, purchasing cooperatives, and consumer cooperatives, but you can also slice it in terms of the economic sector in which they fall. And globally, the top sectors are in agriculture, where about 29% of cooperatives worldwide are agricultural cooperatives. Banking is next, consumer cooperatives are next, and insurance, about 17% of the global share. So they vary around different kinds of economic activity. And I should note that in the United States, there are about 30,000 cooperatives nationwide, and in Washington State, there are about 840 of these. And in Washington, the top areas are water provision, credit unions, and daycare. They make up the largest sectors of economic activity for cooperatives in Washington state.
Well, you've referred to Washington state and the U.S., but where are most of the cooperatives located worldwide? Which countries have the most?
Well, they tend to be in developed countries for a broad range of economic activities, but most agricultural cooperatives are found in developing countries. And there we're actually seeing some pretty rapid growth. So that in Uganda, for example, there was a 13-fold increase from 500 and some odd cooperatives in 1995 to more than 7,500 in 2008. So in Africa in particular, agricultural and credit union type of cooperatives are really taking off in those areas. But I should say in developed countries, cooperatives can account for a pretty large share of economic activity. So that in Finland, for example, 21% of economic activity is generated by cooperatives. Switzerland, 16%. Sweden, 13%. So it can be a meaningful share of economic activity in developed countries as well.
If you look worldwide, what would be your evaluation of the contribution to the economy?
I think what cooperatives often do is they bring a sense of equity to a particular community so that the cooperative is locally owned and locally controlled, and so the jobs and the revenues stay in those communities. And they also tend to bring a sense of resilience. There's some interesting research emerging now that suggests that cooperatives, at least where they're well run, seem to have fared better than standard corporations in the recent recession. And the reason for that is because cooperatives tend not to be as interested in risk as some standard corporations often are, and are much more likely to be cautious in the way that they go about their business. So for that reason, they've fared better in the recent recession, and that's a huge advantage in a time when economies tend to be pretty volatile.
Do you have some specific examples?
Well, one that's really very interesting is in Spain. It's called the Mondragon Cooperative, and it actually goes back several decades. And it's a worker cooperative, so this is one where workers own the product that they're producing, and they decide how the firm is going to be run. And it's one that has done very well, and it's very large as well. It's often referred to as a conglomerate because it has so many different businesses associated with it. It's one of the largest firms in Spain. So that's one that's often mentioned as a highly successful example of cooperative development.
Which types of cooperatives are most significant economically?
Well, in the United States, certainly many of the agricultural and credit union or financial institution cooperatives are the ones that have the biggest presence and control a very large share of the money. So those are often the giants in many countries. And as I said, in developing countries, agriculture in particular is very large.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Gary Gardner, Senior Fellow at World Watch Institute and author of Emerging Cooperatives, published in the 2012 Vital Signs Report from World Watch Institute. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. You've alluded to this earlier, but would you do a comparison of the types of cooperatives in the developing compared to the developed world?
Sure. In the United States, for example, consumer cooperatives are about 92% of all cooperatives, whereas at the global level, they're only 22%. So in the United States, we tend to have many fewer worker cooperatives. They're only 1% of all cooperatives than they do in the rest of the world, and we have many more consumer cooperatives. So there are some pretty interesting differences between U.S. cooperatives and those found worldwide.
From a different point of view, if you consider different countries, what fraction of the people belong to co-ops?
Well, it's very interesting. It can actually be much higher than I think most people would guess. So that in the United States, for example, 25% of people belong to a cooperative. And that ranges way up to 60% in Finland and 70% in Ireland. So in some countries, like Finland and Ireland, the majority of people belong to one type of cooperative or another.
What are the triggering forces driving the development of cooperatives in the different geographical areas? Let's look, for example, in the developing world, what seem to be the primary forces there?
Well, I think farmers in the developing world are trying to find the best possible prices, just as they are in the United States and elsewhere, and they find cooperatives to be useful in generating better prices. They also tend to use cooperatives for marketing purposes, so that a group of farmers, all of whom grow wheat, might band together to form a wheat marketing cooperative that helps to advance the interests of wheat and advance sales as well. So they come in all different kinds and have many different motives. The other one that we've mentioned a lot so far is financial institutions, and they provide the capital that many small businesses need, and often at rates that are affordable for businesses because they're cooperatively run. So one of the interesting trends that we're seeing is cooperatives working with cooperatives, so that you'll find perhaps a worker cooperative that purchases many of its inputs from a purchasing cooperative, both of which get their capital from a credit union. And in this way, you're getting the multiple effects of cooperative cooperation, if you will, as each of these different kinds works together.
Do these combinations of cooperatives exist in all parts of the world, or are they predominantly in one part of the world or another?
Well, you would find those particularly in Africa. You're seeing a lot of growth in this kind of model where agricultural cooperatives are helping farmers to get the best possible price for their goods, for their crops. But they're also turning to credit unions to provide the capital that they need for their business as well. So I think in Africa in particular, where we're finding rapid growth in cooperatives, you'll find a lot of agricultural and banking cooperatives working together.
What are some of the political conditions that help or hinder cooperatives? Perhaps we could look at the developed and developing world separately. So in the developing world, what are those conditions?
Well, I would say in general, one of the things that cooperatives often need is access to capital. Because they don't have shareholders in the way that we understand shareholders for corporations, it's more difficult, not impossible by any means, but more difficult to raise capital, because capital is often coming from all of the members of a cooperative. So a government can be very helpful in helping to provide seed capital, for example, for cooperatives. And that's what happened in the United States with rural electrification and some of those early kinds of cooperative efforts in the United States from the 1930s. The federal government was very active in helping to get those cooperatives established. So providing capital is a very, very important piece. And in the United States, just last year in 2011, the National Cooperative Development Act was introduced in Congress. It's got a ways to go to be passed, but it would set up training and it would set up access to capital and seed capital in particular to help cooperatives to develop. So there are a number of ways in which governments can be helpful in getting cooperatives up and running.
What would you say are the key challenges for cooperatives? You've mentioned capital, but what else?
Capital certainly is a big one. And then another that I would add is the tension that exists in cooperatives between distributing profits to its members and reinvesting those profits back into the firm. As you might imagine, worker members, for example, may want to see their wages go up. And there may be a strong case for increasing the wages of worker members in a cooperative. But there may also be a need to invest in new equipment in the cooperative. And it's an ongoing tension, I think, with where the workers are, you know, both workers and management, essentially, to find the right balance between distributing those profits back to workers and reinvesting them in the firm.
What are some of the features of cooperatives that tend to make them successful?
You know, the democratic nature of many cooperatives is very much a root of cooperative success, because it means that the firms are responsive to member needs and to member desires. So the democratic control is something that is very much valued, I think, by cooperatives and helps them to operate really well. And, you know, Diane, there's one piece that I wanted to mention that I should have mentioned earlier, that, you know, we often think of cooperatives as being, you know, kind of on the margins of economic activity. But as I mentioned, there are, you know, many countries in which it's a meaningful share of economic activity, you know, better than 15% of economic activity. And by one measure, it's very interesting, cooperatives are actually ahead of corporations. and that's by the measure of the number of owners. Now, if we define owners of a corporation as shareholders, there are about 900 million shareholders in the world today. But the owners of cooperatives are the members, and there are about a billion members, cooperative members, in the world today. So there are more owners of cooperatives than there are owners of corporations in the world today.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Gary Gardner, Senior Fellow at World Watch Institute and author of the report, Emerging Cooperatives, published in the 2012 Vital Signs Report from World Watch Institute. Would you expand on how cooperatives can help contribute to creating a more equitable distribution of wealth?
Sure. When shareholders invest in a corporation, a traditional corporation, and those investors, you know, receive their dividends, those investors could be anywhere in the world. They could be, you know, far from the corporation that they've invested in, and in fact often are. So when the profits are distributed to those investors, you know, they can be going all over the world. Whereas with a member-controlled corporation, say a worker firm, a worker cooperative, those profits are going right back to those workers who live and purchase locally. So it tends to contribute to the wealth of the local area in a way that corporate profits are much more dispersed.
Let's speak now about the potential future of cooperatives. What do you predict? Let's look specifically first at the United States. What do you think will happen with cooperatives here?
Well, it's very interesting. I think cooperatives have a lot to offer to workers and to purchasers, people who are really feeling an economic squeeze these days. So I could imagine that the attractiveness of cooperatives will increase over time. And especially as you let people know that firms like REI and Land of Lakes and, you know, Farmers Insurance and places like that are cooperatives, then people will understand that, you know, this is not necessarily a foreign concept. This is something we've been living with for a long time. So on the one hand, I think the economic environment in which we live is favorable to the development of cooperatives. On the other hand, I think we live in an increasingly conservative political milieu, and it's very possible that that environment will not be very hospitable to the development of cooperatives. So it remains to be seen, I think.
Well, you mentioned that in the U.S. we have predominantly the consumer cooperatives, but how about the worker cooperatives? How do you see those developing in the United States, or will they develop?
Well, we'll just have to see. They're only 1% of all cooperatives right now. But there are some interesting ideas out there. There's an academic at, I believe, Loyola University in Chicago named David Schweikert, who has written that we really ought to get rid of all shareholder corporations and just have the government provide a large pool of capital that could be used by cooperatives to run themselves. That's a completely different model from the kinds of cooperatives that we know today, but it would really change the way in which firms do business. And it would, I think, offer a better shake to many workers as worker cooperatives join that model.
If we look now at a different part of the industrialized world, what would be your evaluation in Europe of the cooperative movement?
Well, there's the percentages of people who belong to cooperatives tend to be higher in Europe. So I mentioned Finland at 60%, 70% for Ireland. Austria is up near 60%. So people tend to be more active in joining cooperatives in Europe than they are in the United States. Although, as I mentioned, in the United States, the share is 25%, so it's not negligible here either. But there does seem to be a little more interest. And I think I had also mentioned that the share of economic activity tends to be higher in Europe than in the United States in terms of where cooperatives stand. So 21% of economic activity in Finland is generated by cooperatives. That's higher than you would find in the United States. But it's interesting, if all the cooperative businesses, or the 300 largest cooperative businesses in the world, were one economy, it would be the ninth largest economy in the world and would rank ahead of the economy of Spain. So, you know, it's a meaningful economic actor that's out there in the margins of most world economies.
What kind of political conditions exist in Europe to help promote or the opposite for cooperatives?
Well, I think in general, you know, there's a longer historical tradition. As I mentioned, the modern cooperative started in England, so you're much more likely to find, I think, an understanding of cooperatives and not tend to look at them as sort of foreign structures. There's also just, I think, less of a concern or a fear, I think, in Europe about, you know, ventures that involve people banding together and looking beyond individual interest. That tends to be more of a tradition in Europe than we have in the United States, and I think that helps to favor the formation of cooperatives as well.
Well, you alluded a bit to this earlier, but would you say more about the development of cooperatives in the developing world in terms of what it looks like for the future and what the political conditions are to favor or hinder them?
In Africa, again, that's the area where we're seeing a lot of growth in cooperatives. I think what you're finding is more interest in success in markets, and so it's not so much a political condition, the thing that I'm referring to now, and I'm not very familiar with the specific political conditions in Africa that might be advancing cooperatives, but the economic conditions where farmers understand the need to compete in global markets and the need to offer goods at a price that's competitive, I think is leading many of them to band together to get better prices and more efficiency and greater marketing prowess on their side. And I think that's part of the impetus for cooperative advancement in Africa.
How different would the world look if we had predominantly cooperative businesses rather than the shareholder-owned businesses that we have now?
Well, I think you'd find a lot more local wealth, where wealth would be generated and kept locally. And I think it's probably important at this point to say that, you know, cooperatives are not a panacea. They're a business like any other business in the sense that they have to operate in a market economy. They have to be competitive in that market economy. So they're subject to all the same pressures that any other business would be subject to. So in some ways, the world would not look much different at all. But I think ultimately, you would have a greater sense of democratic governance of our economic institutions and a greater sense that wealth is more equally spread across a local area and that it's not leaving that local area to the extent that occurs in the modern corporation.
Do you see any downsides to cooperatives?
I wouldn't say downsides, but I would say that there are certainly challenges for cooperatives. I think a lot of times cooperatives may be started by people who are idealistic and well-meaning, but may not have the management expertise. As I mentioned, these are businesses like any other and need to be managed well if they're going to survive. And so one of the challenges that some cooperatives face is getting the kind of talent in managerial and other positions that can really help the business to thrive.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think it's important to not be afraid of cooperatives, to look at them as grassroots level businesses that can really help to generate prosperity at the local level. And it's something that I think all of us should be interested in being a part of.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Gary.
Thank you, Diane.
You have just been listening to Gary Gardner, Senior Fellow at World Watch Institute and author of Emerging Cooperatives, published in the 2012 Vital Signs Report from World Watch Institute. For more information, check on the web at www.worldwatch.org. Again, that's worldwatch.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the Streaming Archives section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM. And KEXP.org.